Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. Leader Barclay represents the 120th Assembly District in Central New York. Leader Barclay, good to have you back with us. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Dr. Chartok, and thanks for having me on the show. You know, you can always call me Will.
Okay.
Minority Leader is kind of a mouthful, and William's not really the name I go by. Will's the name I go by.
Will's a good name, and we'll do that. We'll do that. Get it? Okay. Okay. Your thoughts, Mr. Republican Leader, on the Supreme Court fight. Your thoughts on whether lawmakers should wait until after the election to pick Justice Ginsburg's replacement.
You know, you're starting right out with a federal issue. As you know, I'm a state official, but nevertheless, I guess I'd support them coming forward. It might be a little premature. I think we have to see who the president's going to nominate for it. Who knows? Maybe he'll nominate a candidate and both Dems and Republicans will think it's a great selection and have the hearings and get it done before election. But I don't hold my breath on that. But we'll see. You know, a lot of people are comparing this to the situation with Judge Garland. And there's a little difference then and now. Obviously, then we had a Democratic president with Obama and a Republican Senate. Here you have a Republican president and a Republican Senate. So the circumstance, I think, slightly different. But I think we have to wait and see who he nominates. And if it's a good qualified candidate, I would suggest go ahead and advise and consent to the Senate needs to do and get him confirmed or her confirmed.
Now, there was this business where a lot of Republicans, including the Senate Majority Leader, said there should never be a choice within a year of election. And here we only have a few weeks within an election. How do you respond to that? I think the way they respond to it is say, well, now we got the power. We're going to do what we want.
Yeah, I think that is their response. But you could flip it the other way. And Democrats before said, no, go ahead and do it. We got to get this done. He's the president. He gets to nominate or choose what his pick is on the Supreme Court. So, you know, both parties probably have flipped positions, but it is slightly, as I mentioned, it's slightly different because you do have a Republican president and Republican Senate versus before we had he had to get his nomination through a Republican Senate. So that circumstance changed it. The one thing I can say I'm very sympathetic with Senator Schumer's situation is tough being in the minority. I live in the minority in the assembly. And if he feels there should be more power for the minority senators, I hope he'd advocate, obviously, for more power for the minority members in the assembly.
Good one, Will. Good one.
Thank you.
Very creative. Let me ask you, obviously, you have a major election coming in New York State. And I know you have some candidates hoping to win some assembly seats and get a little bit more power.
Right.
But I'm wondering, do you think you're screwed because the president is deeply unpopular in New York?
Well, I think it depends on where you're running. He is unpopular, certainly downstate and in urban areas, but we don't have a lot of Republicans in those areas necessarily anyways. But I think, you know, my district, I represent Oswego County, although I haven't seen any numbers on this, I suspect the president's very popular. But ultimately, I think all elections come down to the local people. If you have good candidates who are articulate on the issues and can provide a vision of how they're going to help their constituency and their districts. Certainly there's coattails in elections, but I think those issues are the most important. And I think I told you on previous radio shows, I feel very confident because our recruiting is sometimes very tough to get good qualified candidates to run. And we've had a lot of success getting good qualified candidates to run. So I'm optimistic that we will be able to pick up seats. I'm optimistic that our incumbents are in good shape, but time will tell, and it's hard to make predictions even though we're only a month out, well, over a month out. It's hard to make predictions until right up until the day of election.
So how is the Democratic Speaker, Speaker Hastie, treating you as a leader of the minority? Are you satisfied with him? I mean, I know that if you want a desk, you've got to ask him for it. So I can't expect you to explode with him. But how is it, you know, you can tell us. Act as if we're just your family, you know. Forget about anybody listening on the radio.
Well, as you know, I don't have much to compare to because I just became leader back in January. But I have a very good relationship, I think, with the speaker. We're in regular communication. Our staff is in good communication. Obviously, we differ greatly on politics. And as I told them, and I told everyone, you know, I don't take anything personally. This is a matter. So when I criticize anybody on policy, it's done because it's based on policy, not on personalities. And so I guess Lee and that, I think he feels the same way. And so we have a very good, cordial, professional relationship. And I consider him a friend. I hope he considers me a friend. And I think we can work together. But obviously, it's very difficult in the assembly, his constituencies, his conference, which is primarily New York City members. And my constituency is Republicans, not completely, but primarily upstate. So, you know, there's just that natural rub there. But that being said, you know, he's got some difficult challenges ahead of him. As you know, I think, what, five or six socialists won in the primaries. And I think that's going to be difficult to govern with those people, you know, nipping at his heels when you want to put some sort of governance together without being too radical and without driving the state into a ditch.
This is very interesting. Very interesting what you're saying here, Will Barclay, Minority Leader, Assembly. Are you suggesting that there's a group of left-wing Democrats out to get this speaker? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
That I'm not aware of. There could be, for all I know, but I'm not aware of that. And I think, but what I was suggesting, he's got a challenge of balancing his conference with a variety of issues. And I think that challenge of balancing that conference with governing is going to be become much more difficult with socialists in the increased number of socialists in his conference. For instance, just take universal health care. You know, the cost of implementing universal health care in New York State is mind-boggling. It'd be more than our total budget, something like four times more than what we take in revenue every year. To do that, it's highly unlikely. And realistically, I think anybody looked at it with open mind would realize that's virtually impossible to accomplish. But these members coming in, I think, are going to continue to push for those type of policies, which are going to be hard for him to balance with maybe more, in my mind, more level-headed type elected officials that might say, you know, you can't get this done.
I was interviewing a Democratic hopeful for the Congress who took on an established member and who lost quite badly. But he was of that group, you know, who are looking for reform. And I asked him, would you vote against Nancy Pelosi? And his answer was, we'll have to see, which I took it to mean, yes, I would. I would vote that way.
Right.
So do you think this guy has an insurgency of that kind on his, the speaker?
I don't have any inside knowledge of that. But, I mean, clearly he's going to have, it'll be more of a challenge him to balance the interest in his conference going forward than it has been. But, you know, he's a capable guy, so time will tell.
Now, I've asked you this before. I want to check in with you again on it. We do know that Andrew Cuomo has said we have such a deep budget problem in New York State that the feds have to step in and give us a lot of money, maybe $30 billion over the next couple of years in order to help us balance our books. So far, the president hasn't acquiesced to that. Do you think Cuomo's right that we need it and deserve it and should get it from the feds?
Yeah, maybe we differ a little bit in amounts. And I think, you know, getting that done politically on the federal level is going to be more of a challenge. But I don't know if your statement that Trump isn't willing to do it, it seems to me, my understanding, I could be wrong, is it is Pelosi and Schumer that have made a political calculation that they don't want to do it prior to the election. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I've heard that. But I do believe that, yeah, the federal government is definitely going to need to come in and bail out the state. We were facing a massive shortfall prior to the COVID. We had a $7 billion shortfall looking at, you know, prior to the COVID. And now I think it's up to something like $14.5 billion. And there's been some talk out there of how to do it if we don't get the federal aid. I know, again, some of my colleagues on the far left want to raise taxes on millionaires. But, you know, I don't think we can tax our way out of this situation. And frankly, that's not going to help us this year anyways. And if you were able to implement these taxes, you know, we wouldn't see any actual revenue from until the following year. So I think that's wrongheaded. We are overtaxed in New York State. I don't think that's the right direction. So I do think the government, the federal government, needs to come in and help the states. And I've been publicly advocating for that since, you know, we've started looking at this shortfall.
Yeah, Will Barclay, but what about all of those billionaires who, you know, are paying de minimis taxes? Shouldn't they pay more? Forget about the common man, yeah, or woman, I agree with you. But what about the billionaires? Shouldn't they pay just a little bit more, especially those who are paying nothing now?
Oh, well, I don't know anyone who's paying nothing, and it's a matter of perspective what a little bit more is. As you're aware, the 1%, the top 1% in New York State pay 40% of ours. Personal income taxes. So they're already paying a fairly large share. The other problem with it, as you know, is they're highly mobile. They can move out of New York State if they feel like they're paying too much. And we're so relying on them that if we lose one or two billionaires, it has a real impact on the budget. So we just can't continue to think we can squeeze more money out of billionaires and solve our budget crisis because they're going to move. You know, New York's share of millionaires has been declining over the years. I think at one point we might have been at 15-16%. I think we're down to 10% of the nation's millionaires. Meanwhile, interesting, Florida, which has no income tax, they've seen their share of millionaires go up to over 20%. So clearly something's happening here. And I happen to think, you know, you just can't continue to tax people and think they're going to put up with it, especially those at the top that can easily move to Florida or somewhere else. So, yeah, it's not the right. I don't think it's the right answer to the circumstance we're in now.
Okay. Minority Leader Will Barclay, let me talk to you about this concept of cities of anarchy. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is dismissing as, quote, political the Justice Department's move to classify New York City, Seattle, and Portland as anarchy jurisdictions and withhold billions of dollars in federal funds. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't know about anarchy either, but I do think we do have an issue in our cities. And it's maybe not all with the protesting, although a lot of crime has come out of that protest. I don't think everybody's out there just protesting because they disagree with, you know, policy or policing. I think some people have taken that advantage of that and have looted, et cetera, which I don't think is acceptable at all. But putting aside that, we do have a huge criminal issue in New York State. We're seeing a huge increase in criminal crime rates in New York City, and it's not just New York City. We're seeing it in Albany. We're seeing it in my, you know, close city, Syracuse in central New York, Rochester and Buffalo. And I do think that needs to be addressed, maybe not by cutting funds, but I do think we have to go back and look at some of the so-called criminal justice reforms we've done, whether it's bail reform, whether it's the raise the age. And I do think this anti-police narrative is also playing into the increased crime. So I think the issue needs to be addressed, and whether we address it through, you know, cuts in federal aid, I don't know if that's the greatest, but I don't think we can just say there's not a problem here.
So I want to go back to what you just mentioned about bail reform. The concept of bail was supposed to be that you ask people to pay up so that they would show up. Now, we're letting a lot of people out based on this bail reform, and we are seeing this rise in crime. You think one in one makes two?
You know, I've asked a lot of people involved in the front lines, and they say it does have an effect. Whether just bail reform alone is the only reason that we're seeing this spike in crime. Again, I think it's a multi-pronged problem. I don't think it's just bail reform, but I think that does play a role. I do think, we talked about this last time, I do think raise the age had an impact too, and there was a great article in the Times Union about that impact that I was having in the Albany area. But I do also, finally, I met with Pat Lynch the other day, who's head of the PBA in the New York City Police Department, and he was just going off about the anti-police narrative and how dangerous that has been. So I think there's a sense of lawlessness out there unfortunately, by the criminals. They don't think there's any kind of responsibility for their actions. They don't feel like they're going to be held accountable. And I think the anti-police narrative, you know, it's just floating out there and it's creating havoc.
Well, the police unions are identifying themselves with the Republican candidates, particularly in the New York State Senate, which went Democratic recently. Are you finding that in the Assembly also, that they're lining up behind your people?
Well, I would say we've always had a very strong relationship with them. But yes, I would say where maybe they might endorse various Democratic incumbents who have held off on their endorsements or endorsing our challengers, just again, because they don't think that the Democrats in either Senate or Assembly have their back. And we're there. We have their back. We understand that they're on the front lines and they need the support of elected officials like myself and my conference to know that we'll back them up.
Will Barclay, colleges are now open. Should they be? Because every time we see them open, I mean, we see something happen. Somebody gets it and then spreads it, and then some people have to go home. And so should colleges be open now? Should schools be open?
I think so, but I think you're right. I mean, especially with colleges, I think people are in close contact with another. I'm not surprised that we're seeing, increase in cases in colleges throughout their open. But I think you got to continue to do it. We can't continue to look at completely shutting down society as a result of COVID. I think we have to look at the cost benefit and some of the stuff. Although there is a danger and we should do it safely, I don't think we can just keep closing things down. I feel the same way with schools. I have a son that is a senior in high school and he's back at school and it's been, they seem to be doing it relatively safely. So it's a balance. I think the SUNY system's done a good job of, looking at cases. I know in Oswego, for instance, they had a spike, so they took a temporary pause, which I think is wise, and hopefully push that back down. But, I mean, we're going to do this forever. We just can't do it. And with the infection rates being as low as they are, I think it's worth continuing to try to open up not only schools, whether colleges or schools, but I just think society as a whole, we have to continue to move that direction.
Do you wear a mask, Will Barclay?
I do. I do. And I don't have any problem wearing it. I've seen different.
This is a trick question. You know that. This is a trick question.
It is. All right. Well, where's the caveat on it?
Well, you said you do, and I respect you for that. And I think that's great. So the question is, why isn't the president, your president of the Republican Party, why isn't he wearing a mask?
Is he not wearing a mask?
No, you see
him
on there.
Seems like I see him in pictures with masks.
Yeah, one time.
And I don't know the effect. I will say this. I don't know the effectiveness of masks, but if it makes people feel safer, I know, for instance, I have some older parents. I wear them around them because they feel safer with it. And it doesn't seem like that big of an inconvenience to me to wear one. But, the president, he's probably being tested. How often is he being tested? And the people who's around, I think the risk is probably pretty minimal other than, maybe there's a statement you can say him wearing a mask. But lately, I've seen every picture I've seen him seem like he has a mask on.
Let's talk a little bit about voting. This big debate about paper ballots. Now, my take on this, Will, I'll be honest with you, as I always should be, is that the reason that this is going on is that the president doesn't want voting by mail because he thinks more Democrats will vote that way and therefore he doesn't like it and will lose the election. And he keeps talking about, fraud and all the rest. Do you think so?
Well, I do think there's legitimate concerns about fraud and with ballot harvesting. I think anybody who has the right to vote should be able to have the right to vote. And we should make it convenient for people, but I don't think we have to go overboard either. I do think there's a certain civic duty to vote, and sometimes that duty comes with a little bit more challenge and maybe some other issues. But putting that aside, I do think there's some issues that, and fraud is a concern with particularly ballot harvesting, but the absentee part of it, no, we don't have a problem with it. Same with, there's a lot of concern about early voting. Interestingly, last time with early voting, for the most part, it didn't benefit one party or the other. So sometimes the stuff is just a matter of people adapting to it and getting used to it, and there's always some concern. So I don't know if I answered your question. I do think, the system could be manipulated.
I did want to ask you a little bit of ballot harvesting. Could you explain to everybody what that is?
Well, essentially what you can do is go out and get absentee applications. You can't get a ballot in New York State. You have to apply for the ballot. You can say you're worried about COVID and get a ballot. Someone could go out and get those in some kind. It's not like you just get it for yourself. So someone could go out to an apartment house, get all these applications and already filled out and just have people go up and sign them. they get the ballot, they can go out and get them and then take them all in at one time to the Board of Elections. So in my mind, how it should work, and I think that can be manipulated, I'm Will Barkley. I want a ballot. I don't feel comfortable going to the polls. I fill out an application, send it in. I get the ballot back. I fill it out and send it back. That is one-on-one. The concern is you get these massive, you know, apartment buildings or something, one person's organizing it. They could be manipulating the voters. How do I know what they're doing by just getting the absentee applications or even once the ballot comes in, harvesting those and taking them all to the Board of Election, one person doing that. So you can see how that could be manipulated. That concerns me.
So what do you think that Andrew Cuomo is doing that's wrong these days?
Well,
how's that for a nice open question?
That's a big opening. Yeah. Let's talk about the COVID. And I think the biggest issue facing the COVID is the nursing home circumstances. Obviously, we've had a lot of deaths in nursing homes. Some say it's 6,500. It could be even more. And we can't get information out of the administration. We can't even get an exact number of how many people died as a result of the COVID. But then we can't get a accurate description why that March, 25th, order came down from the Department of Health that required nursing homes to accept patients who were infected with the COVID. And I think those answers, that has to be addressed. As we've talked about before, if we have a second wave, we want to make sure something like that doesn't happen again. And I also think there has to be some accountability as a result. You know, as anyone said, you know what, this was a screw up, and apologize to those families that maybe tragically lost someone in their family as a result of this policy. So I think a lot more needs to be done on it. Obviously, we finally did have some hearings, legislative hearings on it. I didn't think the Commissioner of Health was too forthcoming with his testimony. I think more is probably needed. I was pleased that the Department of Justice is coming in and is investigating government-run nursing homes. I think that should be expanded to private nursing homes too. But we really have to get to the bottom of what happened during this pandemic and how are we going to prevent that from happening again. And if we can't get basic numbers like how many people were affected, how many people died as a result of this, how are we going to get to the bottom of, you know, what was causing this high number of deaths?
Okay, so moving on from nursing homes, from that issue, you got anything else on your plate, or has the governor been perfect otherwise?
Well, obviously, we think his fiscal stewardship of the state has not been good, and we're feeling it here upstate. We've always, you know, struggled. We've fallen behind the rest of the country during when we're good economic times, and now we're really suffering as a result of COVID. We feel, I think myself and our conference feels, we simply tax and spend too much in New York State, and we're making ourselves uncompetitive with the rest of the nation, and we can't continue on it. And if the COVID demonstrates everything, it emphasized the issues that we already had prior to that. And so if I was, you know, in control, I would not be running that same fiscal ship the way the governor has been running it.
So will we take that as your announcement that you'll be running against Cuomo the next time out?
No, that's not it. You asked me what the problems I had with the governor, and I expressed them, but doesn't mean I'll be the one carrying that torch. But I do feel like there is a good opportunity for a Republican to win in New York State.
Okay, so what about where the cuts would come? You've obviously talked about we're spending too much. So if you're spending too much, then what are we going to cut back on?
Right. Well, you know, that's a great question. I do get asked that quite a bit. And it's interesting when you look at spending, you know, it doesn't matter where you're looking at it. We're almost above everywhere compared to our sister states in the region or even across the nation. But one easy thing, everybody says cuts, don't cut, which there is something to that. But how about just reform and spending more efficiently? And school aid is one example of that. We spend a lot in school aid in the state, and a lot of people say rightfully so. I think we could spend it more efficiently. For instance, we send a lot of money to high wealth. If we had more equitable school funding formula, sent more money to lower wealth school districts and maybe a little less to high wealth school districts, then we wouldn't have to be pumping as much money into it, and everybody would get the same benefit of the education and the money as a result of that. So there's places where I think we could point out where we could be spending money much more efficiently and not have to pump so much money into the system just to make everybody happy politically.
So, Will Barkley, how do you get the various Scarsdales, big spenders and others, to go along with that and say, okay, yeah, we'll take less money and give more money to the poorer people?
Well, that takes leadership, right? And it really takes leadership out of the governor's office. But I'm happy to partner with my Democratic colleagues. They're always for more equitable tax system, more equitable spending, et cetera. Well, here's a great example that maybe we could partner with them to get something done. And yeah, it's problem is there's winners and losers and everything. But a school like Scarsdale seems to me, or another, you know, any other wealthy area can handle that versus where, you know, poorer schools in more rural areas just aren't able to hit, you know, the funding cuts or even level funding for that matter.
Will Barkley, talk to me a little bit if we can. We only got a little time left. But what it's like to be a legislator in the pandemic? What are you hearing from your people? If there's a session, how do they behave? What's different? Where do they stay?
I would say that's, granted, I don't want to see this continue. I'd like to see us get back to, you know, business as normal. But I will say that was a pleasant surprise. I think, you know, doing things remotely over Zoom, we've been able to have, you know, a number of hearings over Zoom. And in some respects, I think that's increased attendance because people physically don't have to drive to Albany, you know, sit in a hearing room. They can do it over Zoom. And the same with actual session. And I've been very happy with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle because I think the attention is still generally there. It's not like people are just signing in and kind of, you know, going somewhere else, doing something else where they couldn't do it if they were in Albany because they'd physically be there. So I think that's been one of the positives. That being said, I don't think there's any substitute for in-person interaction, particularly when it comes to governing. So as soon as, you know, we can feel like that can be done safely, I would strongly urge us to get back to how things normally run.
Well, Will Barkley, we are incredibly grateful to you for showing up. We are out of time. Our guest has been New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barkley. Will, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.